This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Mark Cox Morning Show. Happy you're with us in here alongside Kim St. Ange, Carl Middleman, Susan Thomas, getting you to work with the roads out there. And I have to say, I met some buddies, longtime friends and neighbors out at Edgewild in Chesterfield last night, right? Place was packed and had some great drinks and appetizers. And my buddy who grew up here, grew up in the area, and just retired, was telling me that he was so depressed. And I'm like, why? He said, to get in here, I had to drive past the part of the Chesterfield Mall that they've torn down already. Like, you have to come around the back side of it to see where they're actually tearing into it down there by one side of the lower side of, I guess, back behind Sears and all that. They've started hacking down the middle of the mall. And he goes, man, I got a lot of memories in that place. Like, as a teenager, it's like what he remembered, going there and hanging out with his buddies and taking girls there to walk around the mall and all kinds of stuff.
It's so funny you say that. I grew up in Chesterfield. That was the mall I went to. I have so many memories shopping there. I mean, that was the cool place to go on a Friday or Saturday night. Then the movie theater came along, and that felt so cool to go to the movies on my own with friends. And I, too, saw some of the part of the mall where they've torn it down. It was so sad. And I meant to text you because I noticed, at least from my vantage point, the Teslas, they're all gone.
No, they moved them.
Oh, they moved them. Okay.
So as you continue around the backside, like off Chesterfield Parkway, around the backside of the mall, they used to sit out front there by the jewelry store. Now they moved them around back closer to Edgewild back there. So they're all still back there. And I saw a truck unloading one of those Tesla trucks last night when I drove by. So the staging area for Tesla is still at the Chesterfield Mall, despite the fact that they're tearing down a portion of it.
Very interesting.
There's your update, I guess, for what it's worth. All right, coming up this hour, we're going to check in with our buddy Griff Jenkins. Maybe he can give us an update on those drones. I'm not sure what Griff is officially covering today in Washington, D.C., but that's part of the fun of our segment with him every week. And if you had to look for a job today, how would you market yourself? The answer to that is clearly very directly related to your age, because the youngest kids are doing something that us old fuddy-duddies would never think of. And we're going to get to a segment on that for you coming up here in just a couple minutes. Stick around for that. But first, Carl, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Iran launched a mothership probably about a month ago that contains these drones. That mothership is off the east coast of the United States of America.
Now, it's interesting. That is a congressman named Jeff Van Drew claiming that these are Iranian drones that are covering the upper east coast right now. The State Department says that's not true. We don't know anything about that. So I don't know where the congressman got that information, but they're now refuting it at the State Department level.
But I want you to know that I am, and always will be, a proud feminist. You will always have an ally in me and in my government.
Yep. He is a dude. His name's Justin Trudeau. He's the Prime Minister of Canada, or the soon-to-be governor of the 51st state. I don't know which one of those, but he wants you to loudly know he's embarrassed about being a man.
We look forward to a very smooth transition at the FBI.
Yeah, yeah. That's Kash Patel. Kash Patel says, hey, you know what? Here's the deal. I can't wait to take over, because Chris Ray has now announced he's resigning because he sees the writing on the wall. And if we can get Kash Patel approved for that position, a wealth of information is about to be opened up to the United States of America public, like Jeffrey Epstein's Little Black Book. He claims, Patel, that it resides with the director of the FBI, along with a bunch of those other manifestos that they haven't released, even though you already know all about the shooter of the the healthcare CEO. Isn't that strange?
Caitlin Clark. She's been conquered. That's, and I knew this was a possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Jason Whitlock. Of course, he's on a podcast with none other than TJ Moe, who's been in making headlines the past week or so with his comment about female reporters in the NFL. But Jason Whitlock has been a pretty vocal opponent of DEI programs, and particularly he's been a big supporter of Caitlin Clark in the face of a lot of the heat she took when she first got in the league, with people claiming she only did this because people only liked her because she was a pretty white girl, and all these comments that were made. And Whitlock was always on the defensive about this. Like, listen, let her prove it on the court. And then she went out and she proved it on the court, and they still hate her, right? They still take her to the ground every chance they get, and all this stuff. Well, when she released her statement this week, when she was named Athlete of the Year, about how woke she is all of a sudden, Jason was deflated, but he saw it coming. And I wanted to play that bite for you because he's as disappointed as the rest of us, but not surprised, because he argues that the WNBA may be the most woke organization in America. And I had to edit out some of his comments because I didn't think that it was probably something the FCC would like me to play over the air. He does a cable show.
Caitlin Clark. She's been conquered. That's, and I knew this was a possibility, and behind the scenes, I was halfway predicting this, that, look, man, she has been sent to the very, very front lines of the culture war, of this patriarchy versus matriarchy, this LGBTQ heterosexual war, this the whole gender warfare that's going on, all of this cultural warfare. The WNBA is a feminist, woke stronghold. Perhaps the strongest stronghold of all the strongholds that the satanic left hold.
He didn't. Jason doesn't hold back on what he thinks about the WNBA.
I'm not sure I'd say it's the worst. I think that DEI has absolutely infiltrated the WNBA, and they have affected some of the things that Caitlin Clark maybe feels about herself. Like, is she successful because of her skills, or is she successful because of the color of her skin?
Well, and he brought up race, which is interesting because Jason's a black man.
Right.
And he said that what she's gone through is far worse than what some of the pioneers in the race era it went through in professional sports, like the first black football player, the first black basketball player. Here's how he described that. Listen.
And so we take this little small town girl from Iowa that starred at the University of Iowa, and we drop her behind enemy lines, the WNBA. And Caitlin Clark gets dropped into that, and she's got a boyfriend, and she is doing her best to stay out of politics. And we've seen this league, we've seen other heterosexual women get dropped into the WNBA headquarters behind enemy lines. And they've come running and screaming out like, holy cow, are they hostile to heterosexual women in the WNBA? And so I knew, and I wrote at the very beginning, I was like, hey, what Caitlin Clark is going to face is going to be more difficult than what Jackie Robinson faced going into Major League Baseball in 1947. And people thought I was crazy. And I said, hey, look, Jackie Robinson faced legitimate death threats. But in every other way, what Caitlin Clark is going to face going into the WNBA is going to be substantially more difficult than what Jackie Robinson faced.
Wow.
I think Caitlin Clark was probably liberal herself, but was maybe not wanting to bring that in and talk about it.
Wisely.
Yes. And yes. I think that people have maybe pushed her to do that, to kind of be the spokesperson for this.
Not where she is because of her white privilege.
Right.
It's because she can shoot a basketball into a tiny hoop from halfway across the court.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just be honest. And she's better than most of the other people in the WNBA. Most of them. Not all, most of them.
But she's having fellow teammates, coaches in the WNBA, and big names in Hollywood telling her, you are only successful and have this much attention because you are white and you are privileged.
Yep, that's right. And she's apparently bought into it, like a hostage syndrome there suddenly. Hey, by the way, if you were thrust into the job market tomorrow, how would you handle it? A lot of that, obviously, has to do with your age and where you are mentally in preparing for that next job. You may be surprised what, or maybe you won't, of what Gen Z is depending on these days. We'll be back with more on that here in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned. Carl, thank you. Playing a little Wham for us, taking us back. Back to the day. Let me tell you, back in the day, Kim, you will get a kick out of this because you already think I'm a dinosaur. Back in the day when I graduated from college and I was looking for a job, I had to go to the library, right? Find the latest copy of Broadcast Magazine, look at the ads in the back for which TV stations were looking for news reporters, hand copy down the address, and mail a physical resume tape to some news director in, Podunk, Iowa, that happened to be looking for a reporter, and just hope that I heard back from them at some point.
Did you have to walk that uphill both ways to the
library? But I'm just comparing the way things used to be when you're looking for a job to now. And wow, have things changed just a little bit, I think would be one way of looking at that. And, I mean, actually they've changed. They've changed a lot. We got Brenda Seery with us right now. She's the CEO of Corporate Connections. They do a lot of talent acquisition stuff. And Brenda, welcome in.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark.
Yeah, I'm sounding like an old dude here, but I mean, things have changed when it comes to shopping yourself around for a job these days, huh?
They have, but I will tell you that the traditional resume and applying to jobs is still, the number one way to get a job. The idea of Gen Zers creating videos and putting them out on TikTok, I don't see that as the traditional way to get a job today. And it's great out of the box thinking, but it probably works more for blue collar type work, right? Maybe they're looking to become an influencer themselves. Maybe they're looking for a job working at Nordstrom or Bloomingdale's, but when it really comes down to it, the traditional way still stands.
I feel like hiring managers wouldn't take a video resume seriously. I'm picturing Legally Blonde where she's, laying on a pool float with like a margarita right. in her hand. Here's why you should pick right. me for the Harvard School of Law.
Exactly. And I agree with you 100%. I actually went out onto TikTok and did a little research, and I found a TikTok video of a young lady who's dressed in a bikini sitting in a tub surrounded by cans of alcohol, but she's trying to get a job in a bar, right?
Okay, yeah,
so maybe that would work for her. But I think if she's trying to get a job at a reputable company like a Bank of America, something like that, that's probably not going to work.
Yeah, and some of that you can credit to common sense. Like if you're applying at a bank,
right.
They're going to be a little more buttoned down, right?
Absolutely.
But you never know the age or the mindset of the person who's going to be looking at your resume. I mean, and if I'm applying for a job and at my age and the person looking at my resume is 25 years younger than me, they may not. I mean, where do you go to get that advice?
So, there's a lot of information that's put out on LinkedIn constantly, which is really the gold standard for most people who are looking for a job. And they do give a lot of advice about, you even have to create resumes differently today than you did 10 years ago, because companies use applicant tracking systems. Mm-hmm. And if your resume isn't formatted correctly, that system may reject your resume for formatting issues. So it's really important to, constantly read up on changes and how to be, best prepared when you are applying for jobs.
But the problem is some of these systems that are going to filter out a lot of the people who maybe aren't qualified, they actually could be qualified, but it seems like if you don't have those key words in there, the system won't pick up on it, and then yours is just cast aside.
That's true. That's very, very true. I always say it is okay to have more than one resume. It is okay to adjust your resume as long as you are maintaining, truthfulness about your professional experience, to put in keywords that you see in a job description when you're applying for a job.
So, Brenda, we're talking to Brenda Seery, who obviously works in talent acquisition and is a CEO at Corporate Connections. Yeah, when I saw this, I'm thinking to myself, I would be just out of luck if I had to get, if I'm back out in the job market today actively looking for a position somewhere. But it's heartening to know that not everything has changed about it. and that some of those traditional standards still apply.
Yes, they do. But I will also add that there are companies who use tools like HireVue and SparkHire. Those are tools that they can use to create video interviews, and the company has control in that they can design exactly what specific questions they want asked of a candidate. During the interview process, the candidate can record their answers using the tool, and then they can be viewed by a hiring manager.
Brenda, please tell me you figured out some way to monetize it every time somebody says, "Hey, Siri."
I wish. And believe me when I tell you, I have so many people that ask, are you her? You
know? Yeah, I'll bet.
When it first came out, I wondered why we hadn't copyrighted our last name.
Exactly.
Sure.
No kidding. Well, Brenda, thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Yep. Wishing you both happy holidays.
Thank you very much. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah. Whatever you're celebrating this year. And good luck with that TikTok video if you're trying to put one of those together. Maybe try not doing it in the pool. Coming up, I know where Griff Jenkins would do his, on a surfboard somewhere catching a cool wave. We'll ask him about it coming up. Stay tuned.
I'll tell you one thing. It's not about the technology. It's not about the resources. It's not about the personnel. It's about the aptitude and the attitude to put forth everything they need to do to get this done. I came out of that meeting pissed, and I am pissed, because our residents in this state deserve a government that works for them. And what I saw in there was a government full of freaking excuses, and it really annoys me.
In Kyiv, Ukraine, Griff Jenkins, Fox News. Along the southern border, Griff Jenkins, Fox News. At the White House, Griff Jenkins, Fox News. In St. Louis, Griff Jenkins, Fox News.
Tell me where in the world is
Griff Jenkins.
Watch your back.
All right, Griffer, you're in the swamp this morning, aren't you?
I'm in the Atlantic, weathering the waves in the storm, searching for an Iranian warship that's launching drones. I can't find it, and apparently the Pentagon says it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But there's things flying every now. I am back in the swamp in D.C., but obviously following this story, which is crazy. I feel like I woke up with deja vu on this drone story, thinking, here we go all over again with these Chinese spy balloons.
That was a New Jersey assemblyman named Brian Bergen you were talking about there, and his comment was vague enough that it could cover any variety of government operations. He just says he's pissed. I walked in there. Those people aren't working for our best interest. So that could cover a whole bunch of things. But what he was talking about was that meeting where they were briefed on what we know and what we're doing about big drones flying over Coast Guard ships and maybe sensitive areas along the East Coast, and we're not doing anything about it. And I don't know if that's due to a void of leadership in Washington, D.C. I mean, Phil Murphy doesn't seem all that agitated about it. He's the mayor up there. I just don't understand why we're not more concerned. And boy, heaven forbid some kind of terrorist attack happens and they had done nothing about it. There's going to be hell to pay.
Well, listen, and that's obviously worst case scenario, but look at like just the practical surveillance threat. I mean, look, Congressman, and by the way, Governor Murphy seems to be, and I don't want to overstate this, but he seems to be kind of coming around a little bit, because now he's saying he's not opposed to having these things shot down.
Good.
Or having the feds get more robust. But you know, Congressman Chris Smith was talking about the Coast Guard ship, saying that that one of their boats was trailed by a dozen or more drones. And it's like, how, obviously I wasn't there and I'm not a Coast Guardsman and appreciate their service, but how could you have a dozen drones flying behind your ship and someone doesn't say, hey, let's take these out? I mean, obviously, there would be no authority that they should be there following, forget the surveillance of sensitive military installations, or God forbid, President-elect Trump's New Jersey properties. But simply a U.S. military vessel being trailed by a dozen drones, it's like, hey, hand me the gun. Like, just take them out.
I thought I heard Harris Faulkner talking about how these drones in some cases are the size of a car. Did you hear that?
I heard her talking about that. I haven't seen anything, Ken, that indicates that. But I will tell you this. It was a remarkable moment yesterday on air when I believe it was John Roberts was anchoring with Sandra Smith, and they were talking about the story with the guest, and then all of a sudden we cut to our Pentagon briefing, and Jen Griffin, our correspondent at the Pentagon, pointedly asked Sabrina Singh of the Pentagon, said, "Hey, so are there Iranian warships out off the coast?" And they said, "No, there's absolutely no truth to that." But then the Pentagon went on to basically say, "Well, we don't really know exactly what's going on because we weren't asked to look into it." It's like, how in the world do you need to be asked to look into this, you know, constant reports of these drones over obviously sensitive things like Coast Guard ships?
So as a surfer, I know you'd be tuned into this, but just how far off the coast do you have to get to be in international waters?
Well, it's a good question. And, you know, I mean, it's only, what is it like, 20 miles off
the
coast?
Yeah, it's not far.
I mean, it's not far at all, which is why, you know, you used to be able to go out on these cruise ships and you know, 30 minutes after you leave dock, it's like, well, let's head to the casino. You can now gamble because you're in international waters.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think really this is one of those stories, once again, that all of a sudden the American public sees everything that the government is downplaying, and then it becomes abundantly clear that the government wasn't doing anything about it and may have not even known about it until citizens started talking about it. And therein lies the fundamental problem. How in the world could the FAA not know that these things are happening? Answer, I would submit to you, is that it's these drones are of technology advanced that they can, you know, evade detection.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, we're in trouble.
I hate to suggest that the State Department or the Pentagon would be playing semantics with it, but let's assume there's not an Iranian warship off the coast. Let's assume it's just a cargo ship that happens to be from Iran, which they're using as a base to fly these drones off of. It could be any number of things like that, but until they shoot one down, they won't know. And I just get the impression that he's gung-ho enough that if Pete Hegseth gets that job, he might go up there and shoot one down himself.
I've known Pete for quite a long time, and I can tell you he for sure would take one out, and he's a pretty good shot. He won't miss. But let me, as long as we engage in the theories, and I don't want to call it a conspiracy theory because I think that's too cliche, but people are talking about, you know, a warship off the coast, which seems unimaginable. What if there were Iranians that were somehow coordinating it from on the ground in the U.S.? Well, you say, how could you have Iranian agents just, you know, hiding in the dark? Well, let's look at the internal ICE data that my colleague Bill Malusian put out yesterday that revealed that of the 1.4 million illegals in the U.S., who, by the way, have already gotten final deportation orders from an immigration judge, are in the U.S., not in ICE custody. They're just roaming loose, and this administration has not removed them. Of the 1.4 million, there's 2,618 Iranian immigrants here illegally that are running loose. So, you know, there's a chance that there are already people here that could obviously, you know, coordinate something like this. And so that's, again, not a conspiracy theory. It's just, hey, now that we're trying to look at possibilities, certainly the fact that there could be people that already are here, that have been here perhaps for a while, that are now able to funnel things like the technology of these undetectable drones into the U.S. and people are on the ground to carry out the operations and efforts.
Griff, I know you're Washington based, but I was hearing about how there are these wanted posters with pictures of the UnitedHealthcare CEO who was just murdered, Brian Thompson, and some other high profile health executives. They've been popping up in New York. So do you know much about what's going on? Because I think it was just this week where they started seeing these wanted posters popping up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I must plead ignorant on that. I don't know a lot about that, Kim, but I think, you know, as the Washington swamp creature that I am, you know, I think when we're starting to hear more members of Congress starting to weigh in on it, we're gonna learn more really about the healthcare, the sentiments, the animosity really is what it is towards the healthcare industry. And, you know, if Congress starts getting involved, they're really going to have to take a hard look at you know, balancing what have been decades of frustrations with healthcare companies and the fact that it cannot and must not ever lead to going out in cold blood and murdering a father and husband.
Yeah, like Elizabeth Warren saying, well, you know, sometimes you just push people too far. She didn't say that after January 6th, but she's saying it in relation to a murder in broad daylight in New York City.
Well, and I didn't call her out, and you picked up exactly where I was going to, you know, go, because that's the troubling stuff that you're hearing, because it's like a abject sort of justification of sorts, if you will, and that's just not acceptable in any scenario.
Oh, no kidding. Well, I tell you what, Griff, always appreciate having you on, my friend. We're going to have you next week. You heading into the holidays?
People are going to be throwing shoes at the TV over the holidays going, I'm going to be anchoring Fox and Friends some, America's Newsroom some, America Report some. I'm going to be Himmer. I'm going to be Roberts. I'm going to be Steve Doocy. I'm going to be doing so much that people are going to be tired of watching me. But I will say next week I will join you from Mar-a-Lago. I'll be the transition reporter. And I'm excited about that because my family's from West Palm Beach, and I keep a couple of surfboards down there. So maybe in between live shots, I can catch a few waves.
I love that. By the time all that's over with, all those names you dropped are going to want to be Griff. They won't be the other way around after this next week.
I don't know about that. Well, listen, if you get bored on Christmas morning, I'll be doing Fox and Friends and waking everybody up.
Wow. Hardest working man in Washington, D.C. Griff, thank you.
Hey, you have a good one.
All right, buddy. We'll see you. Appreciate that. All right. We're going to be back in just a minute, maybe with a little bit of breaking news on a story. I'm waiting for a final confirmation here, but if it's true, it would be huge, as Donald Trump would say. We'll be back in just a minute.
Our thoughts are with all of the Gold Star families. They're with the State Department and USAID employees who lost their lives over the course of 20 years of our military involvement in Afghanistan. And I think today especially of the 13 heroes that we lost at Abbey Gate. And I deeply regret that we did not do more and could not do more to protect them.
Where has that been? Can I just ask that question? That's Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State, coming out, almost 3 years later, and apologizing for what happened at Abbey Gate and the people that were killed in Afghanistan. He's just now apologizing for that. Remember, we were told during the campaign when Biden was still the presidential candidate that he had nothing to apologize for and they didn't do anything wrong and they didn't second guess their generals and all of that. You have got to be kidding me.
Well, remember, Biden made that comment at the debate with Trump saying no service members have died while I've been in office. And what a slap in the face. Maybe he just had a brain fart, for lack of a better word. He couldn't remember, which is quite possible. But it's just awful. And Biden's never come out and apologized for what happened, nor has Kamala Harris.
No. I just wanted to play that. I don't know if you'd heard that yet or not. But, I mean, I'm not quite sure what Blinken was thinking about there yesterday. But, you know, I did see Senator Kennedy, John Kennedy, yesterday was having a back and forth over with a general over a lot of what's going on and the wokeness in the military. And if you didn't hear this, it was quite a thing. I mean, the general was getting mad at him and acted like he was completely offended by it. But I thought that I thought Senator Kennedy handled it pretty well. Listen to just a little bit of this here. Hold on, Carl.
That.
Yes, Senator.
In your opening statement. On October 14th of this year, you went on CNN. I want to read you what you said. Make sure I'm accurate. Here's what you said. President Trump is not like any sane leader. I'm very proud of General Milley for saying that President Trump is a total fascist. to Bob Woodward. If he, as chairman of the Joint Chiefs, is calling the president a fascist, I'm so proud of him for breaking that barrier. The challenge is because most MAGA Republicans, they don't understand what fascism is. The reality is that they are, in fact, fascists themselves. Did I read that accurately?
Senator, I am happy to discuss my personal perspective with you separately at any time. That's not the purpose of the hearing today.
Did I read that accurately?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. You think you're smarter than the American people, don't you?
Absolutely not, Senator. I am here to discuss the use of the military as part of this mass deportation.
You think you're more virtuous than the American people, don't you, General?
Senator, I am insulted by your comment.
That was a retired Army Major General named Randy Manor is his name, and he's in this hearing to apparently try to, you know, because Schumer's still in charge, try to blast the idea that the U.S. military might be used in immigration enforcement. They're trying to get out in front of that, I guess, since Democrats still control the Senate. And Kennedy went back and looked at some of the comments this guy's made about his hatred of Donald Trump, and he's like, let's talk about your personal viewpoint on the president. You're no better than Milley or any of these other generals who hate Donald Trump because you can't control him. And the guy acts like he's all put off and offended by it. But I'm glad John Kennedy did that. You need to call these people out because these are the kind of folks that Trump needs to come in and weed out at the Department of Defense. And hopefully that's something Hegseth does. I mentioned some potential breaking news earlier. I'm not at liberty to talk about it yet. I think you might hear a pretty major break in a story before the day is over. We'll see what happens. If not, we'll have it for you tomorrow morning. Stay tuned for the Brian Kilmeade Show. And he'll be up with you in just a couple of minutes. Then Annie and Mark. And we'll all be back tomorrow morning at 5 a.m.
Get more at 971talk.com.